So I thought I'd talk a little bit because these days of mindfulness are always connected to, they're always connected here to these introductory classes. And so I thought I'd talk about, what do we do? Where do we go from here? How do we continue to live out our lives? And especially given the way that the trend of what mindfulness is out there is this kind of false belief that mindfulness is somehow something in and of itself that can fix us, fix all our problems. If you want more productivity, mindfulness. If you want to be more generous, mindfulness. There's this idea that mindfulness all by itself is going to fix everything. But it's not really designed that way. That's not what we've been learning over the course of this 6 weeks and into today. What we've been learning is more connected to awakening the mind. And awakening the mind means learning how to see things as they are and be able to discern the appropriate way to be with it. It's about learning how to be with the moment and not need to change it until I discern what's the appropriate response. What's the thing that I need to do? What's the right thing to do here in this moment? Not the doing what I always do, but what's the right thing to do in this moment? There's also a way in which this practice brings us into a level of humanity that's very different than humanity when we normally think about it. It's not about, do I like people? Do I like everybody? Does everybody like me? Am I a good activist or not a good activist? There's a degree of humanity that understands the difficulty of being a human. There's a way in which we can begin to understand, damn, this is a hard life, this human existence. This is not easy for anybody. I'm not the only scared person around here. Everybody's scared. I'm not the only one that acts out of my fear. Everybody does. There's a way in which we can see beyond the limitations of this thinking mind because we are getting access to a whole nother worldview. The body's worldview is not like the mind's worldview. The mind's worldview is very limited. It's based on what I was taught, what I know, what I've studied. That's it. That's the extent of my worldview, what I believe in. But the body, you can experience things in a meditative sit or just during the walking period. That's shocking. I remember one walking period. We were at this church and I hated walking. I never quite understood it, didn't get it. But everybody was walking, and when you're at church, when you're away in a center, that's one advantage to being in person is because everybody's doing it. So your chances of doing it too is more in line with, because everybody else is. And there's nothing else to do except just sit there and look at your phone, which doesn't work unless you go hide in your car or something, right? So you end up walking. And I was at this, we were at the church over in Mercer Island. And they had a little garden area in the back. And I got on that path and I started walking. towards one tree and then turn around and walk towards the next tree. And during one of the passes, I saw what I thought was a spider in a spider web moving and walking. And then I just kept looking, and it seems as though I could see the ants that were crawling up this tree. And I stopped and I turned around and I looked the other way. And as I'm going the other way, I start seeing more spider webs, more ants. And there was just this, probably about four passes is about all it was, of this experience of nature, that I was not in nature, that I was part of nature. And that part of nature experience was mind-blowing to me. And I'm telling you, it was only like three or four passes of 10 steps. And it had such a profound effect on me that I'm telling you about it. And that was something like 15 years ago. But that little four passes, a total of maybe 5 minutes, 6 minutes. And it was so profound that I never forgot it. This is what the body can experience. An embodied experience is that different than a mental experience. I've had many, many, many walking periods where I was in my mind and I don't remember nothing that happened in those walking periods. But you have an embodied moment in walking and you remember that for life. This is what I think Buddha was pointing to. This is what he was trying to get people to see with this practice of mindfulness and this learning of meditation. It's way more than just, can I get still? There is a stillness that comes with it in time. But if you're doing this just so you can get still, you're probably going to be disappointed for a while, because it takes a while before the stillness actually comes. We don't tell you that in the beginning, but that's the truth of it. It takes a while. You got to go through a period of agitation, like the body's got to say, you really want to get still? Are you sure you want to do this? Because if you really want to do it, I need to clean out some areas here. We can work on that. But are you sure you want to do this? And so that's what we're stepping into. But we're not just stepping into the stillness, this awakening capacity, the wisdom aspect. But there's something else in relation to humanity that we're stepping into. And that has to do with the degree of caring about other people's stuff, my stuff, my being, this degree of caring that comes from an embodied perspective is way different than caring on the mind. The mind's thoughts about caring is really about, you know, who deserves my kindness. But an embodied level of caring is like the sun shining on anything. It just shines. So when I first started practicing, I was floating into this level of caring. And I didn't know that I was getting so open. This probably isn't a good thing to share with you, but I'm going to share it with you anyway. So one day, I think I had probably been practicing about maybe 2 or 3 years by myself. Whatever I'm doing, I'm trying to work it, trying to do it, trying to get more and more and more nicer, nicer, nicer. And this commercial comes on TV. I'm sitting there with my two boys. And this commercial comes on. Got this thin little weed and this short, fat weed, like a Laurel and Hardy, you know. And they have their suitcases and they're scurrying, trying to get out of town. And one weed says to the other one, do you think we're going to make it? Do you think we're going to get out? Do you think we can do it? And he's like, I don't know. Just keep going. Just keep going. And then this giant boot of Roundup came in front of him and scorched him and killed him. Oh, my God. I lost it. I absolutely lost it. And I burst into tears. And I could barely get the words out trying to say, they were just trying to get out of town. And my sons, they burst into laughter. They were like, Mama, I think you're taking this meditation way too serious. Like, watch it here. But what I have since come to understand, having been with so many students, is that what we think of caring is not the caring that this practice is pointing to. That mental understanding of caring about somebody is not what this practice is pointing to. There is a deeper way that we can care about ourselves and other people. There is a way somebody told, I can't remember who it was, said, they were just looking at purple flowers and had this overwhelming sense of love for these purple flowers. Or you're washing dishes and all of a sudden you realize, oh my God, these hands have been taking care of things all my life. This overwhelming sense of care towards hands and feet and beings and just life in general, these kinds of moments just pop up in our lives of practice. It's not something we make happen. It's just stuff that pops up because we are expanding our understanding of humanity from an embodied perspective, not from a mental perspective. We have to be prepared for this. We will care about people and care about things way more than we're used to. And I think the last thing is we are learning to access our sense doors in a different way. So it's this care, we're opening this heart and caring about people. We're connected to being with life and being present. And part of that actually opens up our ears and our sense doors. So sounds can get a little serious. Sometimes they can be exquisite. I can hear birds now at a level that I never really paid attention to them. They were just birds out there. I know birds. But now I hear it as they're talking to each other and singing, and it's enough to make me stop and listen the same way I would stop and listen to someone talking outside my door, caring about things I see and the shapes and the colors and how they intersect and I can't think of that math that deals with lines and
geometric.
Yeah, the geometric shapes of things. I can see that now. I can pay attention to things I never paid attention to before because I smell things, hear things, see things in a much more a vivid way. Life is more vivid. I feel emotions much more now than I did before. And we live in a world that basically says, don't have any emotions. The better you can, you know, be still and know nothing bothers you, that's the good life. That's not the good life. The good life is when you can cry when you need to cry and laugh when you need to laugh. And, you know, be excited when things are exciting and angry when things are angry, and let this emotional realness of life just be a part of life. This is all we're doing. It's just letting life be life, the way life is. Some good days, some bad days. And I think we find a way to kind of appreciate the letting go of things. So we, in a way, detox our life a little bit. We don't have to have so much, and we can begin to let things go. This is what the practice opens the door for. And over time, we just rest in it, whatever it is. We're certainly not going to be perfect tomorrow. We're going to see the same habits we did yesterday. We're going to see them tomorrow. We're going to see them for the next year or so. But it's this faith or this trust that over time, this opening of the heart to caring more, this opening of our ability to see more, and this opening to the wisdom that it's not me all the time, all of that begins to take its toll on us. And we begin to become more expansive in time. But to do that, we need to be willing to practice with these difficulties. Not because we're trying to get rid of it, but because the more we can practice with difficulty, the less difficulty becomes an albatross around our neck, and the freer we become. So you're actually learning how, as Christ had said, you know, to be in the world but not of the world. You're learning how to be in the world without having to be of the world at the same time. I want to leave you with this one poem. This is what I think is an example of what we're doing as practitioners. It's by Annie Lightheart, called The Second Music. And Annie says, "Now I understand that there are two melodies playing, one below the other, one easier to hear, the other lower, steady, perhaps more faithful for being less heard, yet always present. When all other things seem lively and real, this one fades. Yet the notes of it touch as gently as fingertips, as the sound of the names laid over each child at birth. I want to stay in that music without striving or cover. If the truth of our lives is what it is playing, the telling is so soft that this mortal time, this irrevocable change, becomes beautiful. I stop and stop again to hear the second music. I hear the children in the yard, the train, then birds. All of this is in it and will be gone. I set my ear to it as I would to my heart." This is what I think we're learning. You're not getting rid of your life, whatever that life looks like and whatever you do. You're just learning to access the second melody, the second music underneath that life that you live. That aspect of life that we've ignored because it's too low and quieter. You're learning to access that. And what I've come to understand is that part of life that we've kind of ignored and brushed aside, that's what makes the first melody, the noisier, louder, more vivacious aspect of life. That's what makes the second music, is what makes that first melody worth listening to. it's almost like if you really enjoy music, it's not the it's not the melody. It's the harmonies underneath it, the musical instruments underneath that melody that makes that song a song that we love. You take away that melody, you take away that harmony, you keep the melody, but you take away the harmony and you take away the instruments. And maybe it's a great song, but you're like, okay, that's okay. It's not all that, but you add that harmony, you add those instruments in there, and then all of a sudden you have some great song that you cannot forget. That's what it is that we're doing. We're putting the life back in our lives. Putting the life back in our lives. Let's just sit with that for a minute. Just get a sense of that. Just think about how this day is gone. You know, there were some really sweet periods. There were some periods that it's like, some places where we really, really was appreciative, and other places where we're just chalking down the time, trying to get through the day. But it's all part of the day. It's all part of that second music. That second music kind of holds it all together and makes it worth it. All right, good people.